Good morning, Johnny.
Nothing like setting the stage that I can't reach.
You manage to pull it off every year. That's why I'm not worried about the hyperbole. It never disappoints.
Well, you know, listening earlier, I could tell that you're not totally in step with Del Mar's vision of canceling these races with rain on the horizon. But I get some of the reasons they're doing it, but I'm sure. I'm particularly distressed with this Thanksgiving cancellation, and I'll explain why. You know, Gail and I, we go to my mother-in-law's for Thanksgiving, and it's a feast, an absolute feast. She does a fantastic job. But anyway, while I'm there, I usually rely on, you know, I make my bets at home, and then I watch the races, the Del Mar races, on my phone or wherever they were racing at the time, whether it was Hollywood Park or wherever, and I'd watch the races on my phone as a diversion from conversation with my wife's family. You know, it was kind of getting me, he's working. So I always get away with that, and that helps. And that and plenty of vodka. So I'd be able to survive. This year, according to the heart doctor, no vodka. And now no Del Mar. By nightfall, the only one in that room who's had a more trying day than me is the turkey. But other than that, I kind of get what they're doing, and I know the reasons, and I don't know. You know, I don't want to get off my lawn guy. I don't want to be that old man that, you know, says, you should have seen it back in, you know, 1982. You know, racing was great. It was this, it was that, it was. You know, things change. Times change. Things change. You know, I used to hate the guys. Not hate. It's the wrong word. But I used to cringe at the guys like Warren Studi, Mel Studi, the guys at the corner there, Henry Marino. The guys would sit around in the morning at the coffee table there and talk about, you know, regale you with stories of what racing, you know, the Hollywood folks and how they did this and they did that and they went there and who was at this party and that, and that used to really tick me off, because I looked at them and I said to Warren one time, I said, Warren, you know, you guys stole the best part of this game. You stole the best years of this game, which, you know, but probably the people in the 30s and 40s had a great time too. So times change, events change, things, and you have to move forward. You have to adjust. You can't always say, that's not like it used to be. Few things are like they used to be. It doesn't mean they're worse. You feel like they're worse inside, but it doesn't mean they're worse. Maybe, and I don't know if this is the right answer, but maybe horse racing should be like baseball. If it rains, we don't play. Maybe. I don't know. Let's figure it out. But a lot of these things, you know, you realize you probably won't see the resolution of some of the things that are going on right now. Probably won't live to see the resolution. But things change. You gotta roll with it. And I try. But every once in a while, I gotta yell, get off my lawn.
I know. I get it. To me, it's a dangerous. You know, it creates a potential. Not a conflict per se, but at the very least, a confrontation, or the opportunity for anybody else's decisions to be questioned just automatically. And so from that standpoint, I found a little alarming about this, about making this a habit and practice.
Yeah. You know, the other thing you have to kind of work into this mix, and I don't know, I know you love Southern California, you love visiting there, but something you have to factor into this mix a little bit is that when it rains in Southern California, it's like Armageddon. Those people cannot handle rain at all. They can't drive in it. They can't walk in it. They can't live in it. They don't know. It happens so infrequently.
Yeah.
That when it does occur, it paralyzes the freeway system, which is already in bad shape. It paralyzes it even further. And, you know, you have the mudslides. And it really is a... You know, when these storms start to roll in, I know when I was in college, I was playing baseball, and you know, I'd gone to California, Southern California specifically, because I liked playing baseball and I wanted to play baseball, you know, as much as possible. And here it doesn't rain. Well, there was one year when I was in college when it just, I don't know, they call it the Pineapple Express or something. I'm hearing all these things on the news, and Pat Sajak was a weatherman maybe not too long after that, and now there's a real fortune thing. But the Pineapple Express is coming down from Alaska, and it's on this path, and I was so upset that our games would get canceled, practice would be canceled, and the coach said to me, he said, this is what it'll be like this all winter. Because when this pattern sets up, we can get a lot of rain, and it just doesn't stop. And that was true. He was absolutely right. And so when that happens, I don't think that's the case now. It's usually more in the winter, December, January time frame, February. But, you know, when that happens, they lose it out there. People lose it.
I can tell you, I went to, it's not the only place in that regard. We were, years ago when I was living in Montreal, four of us went to Dallas for an Eagle-Dallas game, and it snowed in Dallas.
Well.
And you want to see it. I mean, something embarrassing other than going for a field goal. I've never seen people drive like this. And of course, you know, their tires, nobody's prepared for icy roads down there. I mean, tire wise, they're not using all season type tires, but the cars were pitched all over the place. It was actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certain places.
Anyway, I don't know if I have anything to do with the cancellation. It's just another idle comment by the guy yelling, "Get off my lawn."
That's it. Exactly. Well, before
I try to think of all the good reasons, and it wasn't hard for me to come up with some for canceling
right.
When you believe that rain is imminent. And I came up with pretty quickly three or four or five really good ones that make sense. Including the one that, you know, you're drawing races, you're paying out purses, and you're losing money. You're opening the doors and nobody's coming. You're losing money. So, but, you know, but there were many, many other ones besides that one. But obviously that's the one that we have to consider. And I don't have to buy the thirsty form for Del Mar. I don't have to do all that work with the PPs and... You know, I don't know what I'll do with myself. But
well, there's plenty of other. There's no shortage of options. I mean, let's you know, there's going to be. It's still a very big day of racing.
Yeah, I'm joshing, as they say.
Yeah, it's still a very good day, and actually we can, you know, we can kind of anticipate you know, what lies ahead. And in fact, even today, we get started with stakes at Mahoning Valley. And I haven't even mentioned yet, I sent a tweet out this morning, but Fairgrounds kicks off on Thursday, too. They've restored their Thanksgiving opener.
Yeah. What was ideal about Del Mar is that the time frame kind of hit right around that late afternoon into evening, past dinner. It was a late afternoon kind of thing. And then it just fit really well, So maybe I'll have to take a look and see if Golden Gate's from that day. I'm sure I assume they are.
Well, and that, that also kind of leads us into the full effect of Thanksgiving on the racetrack. It's funny that Thanksgiving has always been so big, and Christmas is once Calder stopped running Christmas on Christmas days, right? That was at one time that was a big. They were the only game in town on Christmas, Calder. Right? That was a tradition.
That must have been pre-simulcasting.
Because you don't remember ever betting on it.
I don't remember betting on it. No.
that explains everything. Well, speaking of which, did you what'd you do yesterday? Did you participate in the force out?
I did, and. The first race was kind of simple, I think. I used a couple in there, I got through that leg. In the second leg, I had a single, and I remember messing with my wife. We're sitting on the couch, the football games were on, and I told my wife, I hope I get knocked out of this thing. She said, what are you talking about? Why are you saying that? I said, well, because I don't want to hang around here for five races and they get knocked out in the last leg. I'd rather just get knocked out now and have it end. Put me out of my misery. Well, I got through the second leg. The third leg, they knocked me out, which I thought was fair. That was considerate to knock me out there. But again, we see these force outs and nice pool. The off-the-turf thing kind of threw me because I checked early in the morning. And I got all the scratches early in the morning, and then I guess they got a rainstorm roll through there, which will happen in Florida. And so they were off the turf, and I quickly, went back and looked through, and yeah, I'm okay. I think I'm okay. But great payoff. I mean, if you look at the races and the winners, certainly not impossible. Was it like 4,700?
Yeah,
great payoff for 20 cents. I think it's a good day for players. It wasn't really impossible. It was hard, but it wasn't impossible.
When you say you got knocked out in the third leg, you didn't. That the even money favorite, deal with a dude. You didn't use him.
Wait a minute. Now, hold on.
No, it must have been the fourth leg. You got knocked out in the fourth leg with that. Are you talking to me?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Makes sense. Yeah. That was the trickiest horse.
Yeah. Well, that's for me. Yeah, and I, as I looked at it, the overall analysis was, my game plan was that early, I think you can get through with just a couple of horses early. But as the races progress, I think you've got to get up a little deeper as you go. Seven, eight, nine. I thought they were progressively more difficult. So that was kind of the game plan. But I never made it to the game plan part. What is that Mike Tyson? Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
That was great. But Saturday, we had that the single ticket winner at Gulfstream Park. Gulfstream Park at Del Mar, single pick six winning ticket. You know, I talked about tickets sold through Express Bet. Well, this one went to a member of our Express Bet extended family, Jim and Liz. I can mention their names because it was on Twitter, a shot of them at Del Mar celebrating their victory. Put in a $1,400 ticket and hit the single ticket pick six for return of $188,000. And to look at his ticket, which is always interesting, I think, even though I'm never going to put in a $1,400 ticket, it's just, you know, unless I have a group of guys going in together, I'm just not going to do it. But to look at how someone put together a ticket, he singled the first race, was a 440 winner. It was a six-horse field. He got that one. The second race was a 10-horse field. He used six horses, and he got fortunate there with a 17-1 shot. So the second leg winner paid 36.80. The third leg, he used five of nine horses, got a 6.80 winner. The fourth leg, he used two of eight. And got a 780 winner. And then in what was very much a key move, not only because he had the winner, but he went against the heavily favored Bob Babcock Roadster. And he had another runner in there, and that runner won the race. And it's just an example of how powerful when you knock out a 4-5, a 3-5, when you get a horse like that, especially coming from a high-profile barn like the Backwoods Stable, he got the winner roadside at, roadside was out. He got the winner at 760. Used two of the four in there. And then the last leg, he used five of the 10. And if you happen to see that race, he sent me the photo finish, and it is, I think, about as tight as they get. So he got home in the last 17.40 for that winner, and $188,000 playoff. And I know Jim's had some great wins in his horse playing career, and I think the first time we met, we were talking about the races, obviously, as horse players do. We're talking about our wins and our losses. And he very, not in a boastful way, but in a very kind of almost embarrassed way, he said, you know, here at Gulfstream, he said, that was me that day that you remember the disqualification in the last race at Gulfstream? There was a single ticket winner, and it would have been, I want to say, and they disqualified the horse. And there was a big stink about whether the stewards knew that there was a, you know,
yeah,
that was in the stewards.
Yes.
Remember that?
I do.
Like, I want to say, I'm really bad at this, but 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, that's about right. I would have said five or six. Yep.
Yeah. So he said, he very sheep, not bragging, not painful, not crying, not whining. Said, yeah, that was me. I said, what? I have to stop talking to you now because I don't have any stories that can top that one.
No. How about that?
Yeah. But anyway, I'm so happy for him. What better place to have a single in the pick six? And the old version, too, the modified old version, $2 pick six with a jackpot. So Jim's glad they have the jackpot because that's what he took down with his single ticket. But what better place than Del Mar to have a winning, to hit a $188,000 pick six score? So many great places to celebrate. Although I guess any will do in that situation.
No, that's tremendous.
Yeah, it is. We had some less powerful wins. My favorite, and I don't even play this wager. I don't think I ever. I may have played it once, which is really weird because I play a lot of goofy stuff. The Super High Five, I think maybe it is. Sunday at Del Mar, the ninth race. It was a $1 bet. The total bet cost $18, and it got back $15,000 for $1. I guess they're calling it or maybe that was a pick five. No, $1. Maybe it was a pick five. I'll have to look it up. But what I like is that you can bet $18 and win $15,000. So many of these wagers sometimes, you know, and I like to bring them up. Here's a Stronach 5 ticket, $32 ticket. Got back 11,000.
I saw there was a handful of 17 winners, I think, give or take, or 11 winners maybe on Friday of the five. It's funny you bring up yesterday's nightcap, because it just so happened when I went to print the Cary Grant yesterday, Dean. And speaking of small bets, small numbers with big wins, Dean Peterson has got like how many horses, and he. He wins at a disproportionate amount of time. But yesterday at Del Mar, it just so happens I've got the chart for the nightcap, and the pick five paid $25,700. The pick four paid $18,700. And that super high five that you're mentioning paid
$20,400. Oh, $15,000.
Well, that might have been $15,000 after tax. But no, because maybe 600 to did you 300 to one?
Maybe because it's a small ticket.
Because it's a small ticket.
Because his return on investment was 86,188%. That's a good return.
Yeah, that's what that is. That's got to be. That's it. It sounds like the super high five, Johnny, and it was keyed by the $85 winner of Karen Headley. So that's probably what it was.
And the ticket went one, by three, by three, by three. So,
wow.
I mean, I play tickets and look like that all the time. Here's another favorite, a Stronach 5 ticket, $1. Stronach 5 ticket, which is the base amount. $6 was the cost of the ticket. We talked about how difficult it was. Not for this person. $8,500 back, one by one, by two, by three, by one. That's what you call some precision handicapping.
Well, but at the same time, sometimes when it comes to these kinds of wagers, you also don't know if it's part of multiple tickets that were submitted.
That is true. That is true. And it's kind of hard to, you know, get reporting on that because, you know, your tickets are, each ticket is a ticket, you know.
Right.
That's true. That's true. So I'm going to, but I like to believe that it was a single ticket from one person that played a $6 ticket and did it. But you're right. That sounds like maybe an ABC kind of ticket. 20-cent pick six at Churchill, $32 ticket, returned $8,300. So, I mean, I bring these things up because, you know, as players, I think we enjoy hearing about, particularly when there's a huge score, $188,000. I like to see, well, what kind of a ticket was it? And a great exercise for horse players out there. Try this one on. Look at a pick six and pretend that money is no object. In other words, so, I mean, obviously, don't be ridiculous about it. Don't put in a $100,000 ticket when the pool's not even that big. But money is no object. Put on the ticket, you know, make it a $700, $1,000, a $1,400 ticket, $2,000 ticket, whatever you want. and do this a couple times, and you'll be amazed at how many you miss.
Yeah.
For people to say, "Oh, I don't have enough money," you know. Look, I'm not gonna say that having enough money and having a bankroll to play these exotic wagers is important. It's critical. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying it's still hard. On top of that, it's still hard. So it's a great exercise because you'll find out that just how difficult it is.
You'll remember that I've discussed this before because we had an exercise at Derby Trail for a number of years when there was the $2 pick six, and Andy Serling actually prompted this, and we had a contest where we gave people big budgets to make up tickets. And Andy suggested it, you know, to kind of demonstrate just how challenging it is, even when you've got, you know, $1,000 to spend. I mean, that's a $2 version, but that would be, you know, in this environment with the 20-cent thing, figure that's a $200 50-cent ticket. So you can apportion it based on the increment. But it's a challenge, and it does seem, Johnny, that coming out of Breeders' Cup, that $1 pick six discussion, that it didn't go on for very long, but I did sense that some people kind of recognized that a $1 traditional pick six circumstance as utilized for the Breeders' Cup, ultimate pick six, as they used to call it, that is kind of the right in this day and age. That feels like the right, traditional pick six format to use.
Yeah, I'm a supporter of that. I enjoy playing that pick six because the dollar makes it makes it twice as hard as 50 cents when you're constructing the ticket, but it makes it half as hard as the $2 version. And the bankroll, you've got to have a bankroll, but it's not ridiculous. You can still put in a decent ticket, and I think that's a winner. I think that's a winner. And of course, we've got the Magna 5. Magna 5.
Atta boy. Nice.
The Stronach 5 is at the $1 minimum, and I think that's the right number because it squeezes you. You become used to now the 20-cent, the 50-cent, and now you go back to the dollar, and it just makes you bear down a little more. But I think that's the right number, especially if you go that extra leg, the sixth race. Yeah, it's going to make it challenging, but it doesn't exclude a bunch of people because of cost. So I like that amount. I can't believe I can't remember his name, but the fellow's name that famously hit the Gulfstream Rainbow Six.
And then Dan Borislow.
Dan Borislow, yeah. Dan,
the late, away, we should say, the late Dan Borislow.
Passed away, I believe, playing soccer. But anyway, if you remember his ticket, I can't remember the amount. It was not a cheap, when he took down the, if I set the stage correctly, he took down the Rainbow Six the day before a mandatory payout. So
correct.
The pool was gigantic, maybe $2-3 million, somewhere around there. He took it down the day before with a ticket that was very expensive. It wasn't cheap. I think he had, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say two singles, maybe three singles, and pretty
two,
much
I
everyone
think.
Else.
Two. It was two with almost four alls.
Yeah, yeah. That's one way to approach it. That's one way to approach the pick six. Now, you can do that, I think, with 20 cents, with a 20 cent minimum. But with $2 minimum, you're probably not going to play that ticket. So, there's one of the differences right there.
Well, I did a quick search to get the specifics because I knew that at my website at Derby Trail, sure enough, there it is. Dan, this is my write-up the next day where I said a stunning turn of events in the Rainbow Six. Dan Borislav scooped the record $6.7 million pot 24 hours before a forced distribution today and may have saved small players a lot of money and frustration in the process. It cost the well-known owner breeder $15,000 to hit the sequence.
You gotta love it.
How about that?
That was one of the you know what? Certain times of history, JFK Kennedy's assassination, 9/11, they remain etched in your memory. Where you were, what you were doing at the moment you found out that had happened, the event had occurred. I remember where I was when I found out that Dan Borislav had hit that Rainbow Six and scooped it out from under us. I was sitting in a fish market on my phone watching the last race of Gulfstream and then getting the results. I'd already done all the, as some of the other horse players had done. We had done all the work. We were going to take down that Rainbow Six. And here he came along and and pilfered it right out from under.
I'll get Casey to check the archive, but I had him on, a couple of days later that week. Dan came on, and he was a lot of fun, and a guy that I asked him. Do you remember that conversation when I said, "Where does that put you?" I said, "Does that get you even?" He said, "Almost."
The Magic Jack.
Exactly. He was some character.
And I believe, I could be wrong, I believe he's from the Philadelphia area.
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, we went down that road. Now get off my lawn, will you?
Well, Johnny, that gets us to about that juncture where everyone looks forward to you telling us what it is about Thanksgiving that makes it your favorite holiday.
Who told you it was my favorite holiday? Yeah, it is. it is my favorite holiday. There's so many things that come together on Thanksgiving. Certainly the food, as I said earlier, my mother-in-law does an amazing spread. And I asked her one year, we were finishing dinner and I sitting at the table there, stuffed to the gills, and she was in the kitchen cleaning, beginning to clean up, and I said out loud, "Why don't we do this? Turkey is a vastly underrated bird. Why don't we do this more often? Have this turkey with the fixings and the mashed potatoes and the whole thing." And she looked at me and she said, "Because it's a lot of work." and that was kind of the end of it. The end of the story. So that's great. And then you've got family, and it is my wife's family that I spend Thanksgiving with. And I certainly was kidding earlier and about speaking to them. It's so great to see everyone and be with everyone or around the holidays. And you miss those that aren't able, that aren't with you anymore, who may be responsible for it all. And that's a moment of Thanksgiving that's important, is to, whether it's a mother, a father, a grandfather, a grandmother, a great grandmother, whoever, but you know who they are in your family, who the leaders are, and every family has them, who the givers are, who the sharing people are. Who's responsible for what's, maybe they're not here anymore, but their lives contribute to what you're enjoying in your lives. And Thanksgiving is a great time to sit there and think about this and realize that this didn't happen by accident. Someone spent their life building this family, building this group of people. Yes, there are extended families there. They didn't really have anything to do with that, but they had something to do with everyone getting together on this day in this place. And I just think that's a big part of Thanksgiving. And, you know, the football, I enjoy watching the football, and people, some people like the basketball. The NBA has some big games, and then the weekend, the whole Thanksgiving's not just one day for me. It's the entire weekend, because then I just bloat myself on leftovers and football and horse racing, and just enjoy that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I really do appreciate what happens on that sequence of days. The Thanksgiving overall, I guess the more I learn about where Thanksgiving comes from, and that all the pilgrims didn't sit down with the Indians, or they called the time out between between taking their land or whatever. Whatever the story is, whatever the truth is, I don't know anymore. I'm trying to find out. But what does it mean now? What does it mean to me now, since you asked the question of me? Time to think about things that I'm grateful for and thankful for. Things that maybe didn't go so well, but what is there? I've already faced that they didn't go so well. What's the good part about it? What's the good side of the negative? You know, if something has been challenged, for example, this year has been a bit of a challenge for me health-wise. I've had two heart procedures in the last year, and, you know, it's been a rough year. I had a rough time golfing this year. I didn't enjoy it as much. A lot of pain, a lot of problems. It was a rough year. So, well, how can you be thankful for that? Well, I can be thankful for that because that's all it is. It's just a pain in my ass. It's not anything serious. So many people have it worse than I do. And these things are like a troubled trip. You know, I mean, there's another day. I'm going to race another day. This is not the, you know, this is like a year that you can say, well, health-wise, that one didn't go so well, but I'm still an incredibly lucky person, incredibly fortunate. And I, you know, there are a couple of, you know, I like that one about if we all hung our troubles in a stocking above the fireplace, each person would quickly grab their own. And I'm a firm believer in that. And so I'm grateful that mine are small, insignificant almost. Friends, I'm grateful for my friends. I have, you know, one of my friends has gotten to know Will, a great friend. Craig is my other nearly lifelong friend. Just fabulous, good friends that I've had all these years, despite spending 30 years in California. And these were guys that were friends in Philadelphia before I left, and friends even when I came back. Other friends, not as close. Those two are my closest friends. I have a great extension of friends. People I've met through this show. People I've met through ExpressBet. My duties at ExpressBet. I've become friendly with so many people. My friends in California, who I worked with on the racetrack for so many years, very good friends, very close friends. We shared many great moments together. And, you know, I may be kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, but it's a reason also that what happened, particularly in Southern California this past year, I'm going to extend it. Since the fire at San Luis Rey, the fires down there, and then leading into the winter, the trying, challenging winter that they had. My friends were involved in that, in all those incidents. And so I feel for them. I'm grateful that everyone, well, that most have been able to come out the other side without being wiped out completely. So that's really good. My wife, there are no words. Jim was lucky to win that Soto in the pick six, and my wife tells me when I yell and scream about a close photo finish that goes the wrong way, she laughs at me and says, "Don't you realize when you met me, you used up all your luck?" And she's absolutely correct. She is wonderful. In racing, you know, it's been a trying year. Been a rough year. Tough year. Tough year for the horses. Tough year for the racetrack. Tough year for racing fans. Because, you know, I'm tired of being on the golf course or being out to dinner or at a party or a gathering. And someone says, "What do you do?" And I tell them, and they say, "Do you know that racetrack in Santa Anita?" "Yeah, I know that racetrack. I spent 30 years there." "Oh, that's where they're killing the horses." No, that's not where they're killing the horses. You're wrong. You don't understand. Allow me to explain to you what's going on, what happened. And I'm not excusing it, but here's what happened. And to go on and explain, I'm thankful. And someone would say, "Well, how can you be thankful about any of that? Any of what happened? How could that be on your thankful list?" Well, because the thankful part of it comes out because there are so many people who care about horses, who love horses, who spend their, you know, you just had a guy on, Mr. Tiller, who talked about his groom. I can't remember the groom's name, but she's there 7 days a week for this horse, Pink Floyd. That is not unusual. That is common, actually, for grooms and people who care for horses to treat them as family members. And that's the part of the story that it's come to light a little bit. It's moved forward a little bit. And that's what I'm grateful for. And I think there's going to be more of that. I think more people are going to come forward with, you know, stories about how horses are cared for and what goes on in the backside. At most racetracks, in most barns, if you want to say to me, does everyone treat horses perfectly? No. Everyone, in air quotes, doesn't do everything, in air quotes, correctly all of the time. It just doesn't happen in any endeavor. So, yes, there are people who cut corners. There are people who do bad things. There are bad people. But what I'm thankful for in the face of what's going on is that there are also many, many, many good people, great people. There are leaders. I know, you know, if you spend your time on social media, you can get down. But there are good people. There are good people in charge. There are good people taking care of the horses. I know. I've been there. I've seen it. And I'm not a Pollyanna. I'm not a Rube. You know, yeah. Are there bad instances? Are there instances of bad behavior? Yes, definitely. Can we root that out? Well, most of it, yes, and we do. But there's always going to be that underbelly. I don't care what business you're in. But at the same time, thankfully, there are good people, and there are many good people, and they really care about the horses. They care about the industry. You know, horse players always say, we get ignored. And that gripe has got some validity. But there are people who do support the horse player and do speak out for the horse player. So I'm just grateful that all this, the tough year that racing's had, and really on the racetrack side of it, we also had a difficult year because we lacked a superstar. No one stepped forward. Look, Brixton Warder, if he's horse of the year, he absolutely deserved it. Had a fantastic year. You know, we won every time he went out, you know, just, and there were other horses who had fantastic years. And there were horses I enjoyed watching quite a bit. I enjoyed Vasilika quite a bit. I really enjoyed watching her run at various Southern California racetracks, you know, over Simon Cass, but she really, I don't know why, I just liked watching her run. Bricks and Mortar, Napoleon is a fabulous horse, an outstanding horse. But no one really, because of the way the Triple Crown kind of sorted it, or didn't, yeah, no, I guess it did, sorted itself out with the maximum security issue with the disqualification in the Derby. Country House is off the shelf. War of Will has his day in the sun in the Preakness. Sir Winston, his day in the Belmont. Code of Honor was fun to watch. His development was his kind of emergence early on in Florida, and then kind of not really stepping forward, making a big step forward until, you know, kind of you almost watched him develop into winning the Travers. So that was a highlight of the season. And in the hands of a respected horseman who's done this many times over the years. That was fun to watch. That was great to watch. But we really did lack. And the Breeders' Cup, again, the horses I mentioned, Midnight Beast, who had a sensational year. Uni, Got Stormy. It was a good year, but no one emerged. We didn't have a superstar this year. Now, I'm okay with that because we had a couple of really gifted, we had like three of them. We had like three students, and they just happened to be trained by the same guy, which is pretty amazing. We had Arrogant, we had American Pharaoh, and come on, Steve. I might not think of his name.
Which one?
The Triple Crown winner.
Oh, Justify.
Yeah, Justify. So, those were extreme cases. Look how many years we went without a Triple Crown winner. And Arrogant was sensational. He was just awesome. So I'm okay with having a year without a superstar. And but I'm thankful for all the wonderful performances. And I really did enjoy watching these winners. Kefevi, I can't forget her. She was fun to watch all year. So I'm grateful for that in the racing side. And then it's funny because you talk about racing on Thanksgiving. We used to race, and I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again because it relates to Thanksgiving. I think I only tell it on Thanksgiving, but anyway. It was Thanksgiving morning, and I was at Hollywood Park. Dinner at the family and everything wasn't until the afternoon, so I was out there in the morning and visiting the barns, and I stopped by Bobby Frankel's barn, which I did every morning, and we're sitting in the tack room, we're talking, and it's about 10 o'clock. And I said to Bobby, I said, I'm going to go. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go home. It's Thanksgiving. You know, I got to be with the family. He said, Thanksgiving? What the F you got to be thankful for? And I always thought that was just a great example of Bobby's wit and piercing to the heart of of any matter. You know, I was a struggling jocks agent. I didn't have a lot, but I had a lot to defend before. I really did. But he could just dig you. He could dig you right where it hurt. And he was one of my friends. You should hear my enemies. But on the top of the cherry on top of the sundae, when you talk to me, what I'm thankful for is something that happened this year that really was amazing, an amazing experience that I never even thought about it, really. The birth of my granddaughter and, you know, watching her grow up. She was born in May, so it's only been, 7 months, 8 months. Watching her develop and, you know, the FaceTime calls and the pictures, you know, every daily, it's the photo doesn't show up, I'm lost. You know, and if one does show up, I can't stop looking at it. I look at it 3 or 4 times a day. It is just the most amazing experience. And it revitalizes you. It regenerates you. It gives you a jolt of adrenaline. It also gives you something to worry about. Because before she was born, before I knew she was expecting to arrive, I remember thinking to myself, oh, great. My daughter's grown. She's wonderful. She's got a good eye. She's happy. I have my wonderful wife. My family's good. Everyone's healthy. Things are so good. You know, I'm kind of getting along in years, so, you know, but I don't have to worry because everything's good. Well, when you have a young one come into your life, you start to realize there's going to be a life after you, and there's going to be problems, and there's going to be challenges, and there's going to be bad things happen, you know, and that starts to, you start to think about it. But then you have to realize there's also going to be solutions, resolutions. And there are good people. There are good, strong people who are going to make it happen. Good and evil will always be in a fight. Sometimes good will win. Some rounds will go to the bad guy. But in the end, I'm thankful that there are good people out there in all of these matters, family, racetrack, whatever. There are good people out there, and I'm just rooting for them to continue to win. And that's all I have to say about that.
Johnny, as always, you know, you touch on so many themes and areas that connect with, you know, with people and, you know, everybody within the community of stakeholders and horse players and fans and it is a community. I mean, by that part, you know, should be reminded and driven home as often as possible, and that's why even with, you know, a great deal of discord regarding, you know, courses of action, at the heart of everything is a common appreciation for the sport and the game and the industry. So everybody, you know, this is why what you do every year on this date, on this Monday before, it always resonates for that reason.
Well,
so thank you.
I know that.
Well, enjoy, and thanks for another. I mean, obviously the year's not over, but it always feels when you get here. You know, this is always the grease skids to the end of the year from here on in. But best wishes to you and Gail, and now the extended family, the new generation, and much, much more. So,
well, thank you, Gina. Have a fabulous Thanksgiving, and I know you guys are going to get to experience the grandparent thing in the next month, or
yeah,
the next
two,
year,
three,
I guess.
Yeah,
in the next
3 months.
Yeah, 3 months, and you'll know what I'm talking about. I think it's an amazing experience. So have a great Thanksgiving, and I know you'll be cooking and shipping it upstairs. Obviously, you got an upstairs, downstairs situation with Dad, right?
Exactly.
That'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it as always. Johnny D, everybody. XB, Johnny D. Take a top of the hour break. We got an hour to fill out on this Monday. Charlie Lopresti is going to join us next and pay tribute to the late Mort Fink, who really, I think I wrote on Saturday morning, the kind of owner that every trainer in their career wishes they could have. If a Morton Fink should come along for every one of you out there that trains horses for a living. Charlie Lopresti joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com. Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
This is the house that funk built. Groove Armada style.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 5 minutes into hour three. And the news that came, I think it started to hit various wires and not sure where the first obituary appeared for Mort Fink, but the word started to spread on Saturday morning, and had to reach out immediately to Charlie Lopresti, because not only did Wise Dan engage and delight racing fans and players, Mr. Fink and the ride that Wise Dan took him on was really part of the story and made it that much more enjoyable. And I'll repeat that every trainer should wish that a Mort Fink comes up to them someday at the racetrack and says, "I'd like to send you a horse." Charlie Lopresti joins us.